Good afternoon and welcome to On the Arts, KLW's radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week, it's all about opera, Doc. I'll talk with Jeffrey McMillan, the director of public relations at San Francisco Opera, about their final offering of their fall season, Bizet's Carmen. Plus, the director and one of the leads from the Opera San Jose production of La Boheme, Michel Cuisant and Melissa Sondhi, respectively, and Celine Ricci, founder and artistic director of Ars Minerva, on a more obscure operatic offering from the Baroque period, La Flora. All coming up after this update of news from the BBC. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Moira Alderson with the BBC News. President-elect Donald Trump will have full control of the levers of government after it was confirmed that his Republican Party had retained its majority in the House of Representatives. His ally, Mike Johnson, who will again be House Speaker, hailed the result as a new day in America. Here's Sumi Somaskander in Washington.
The result means Donald Trump will have a smoother path when it comes to turning his campaign promises into real-life action. We're more likely to see swifter confirmation of presidential appointments, judges and cabinet nominees, and Trump-backed legislation can clear Congress with little opposition. The majorities in both chambers are slim, which could cause some vote-counting headaches for both party leaders. But at least in the first few months of Donald Trump's second term, rank-and-file Republicans will be eager to fall in line behind their new president. That means Donald Trump should enjoy at least 2 years of limited congressional oversight.
Meanwhile, Mr. Trump has nominated the outspoken conservative Congressman Matt Gaetz as Attorney General. In that role, he'll decide whether the federal criminal cases Mr. Trump currently faces are dropped, Tom Bateman reports.
Mr. Gaetz is seen as a divisive figure by many fellow Republicans, as contemptuous of the rule of law by Democratic opponents. He is picked to become America's chief law enforcement officer and would lead the same executive branch of government that has spent years investigating the congressman himself, a sex trafficking probe closed without charge into allegations he denied. Mr. Gaetz backed Donald Trump after his supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol and voted with about 150 Republican colleagues to overturn the 2020 election result.
Other nominations included the former Democratic Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard as Director of National Intelligence and confirmation Senator Marco Rubio will be Secretary of State. Iranian activists say a well-known human rights advocate and former journalist has killed himself at a busy junction in Tehran. Kianush Sanjari took his life in protest at what he called the dictatorship of Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Kasra Naji reports.
In the early hours of Wednesday, 42-year-old Kianush Sanjari posted a message announcing his decision. He said if by 7 in the evening, 4 named political prisoners had not been released, he would take his life in protest against what he called the dictatorship of Khamenei and his lackeys. In a later post, he also named a site in the center of Tehran where he was going to take his life. Hundreds of people, if not thousands, took to social media urging him not to do it.
Torrential rains have been lashing parts of southern and eastern Spain for the second time in less than 3 weeks. The river Benamargosa has burst its banks in Malaga province, where about 4,000 people have been evacuated. Road, rail and air traffic has been disrupted. World News from the BBC. The president of Argentina, Javier Milei, has recalled his delegation from the UN climate summit in Azerbaijan. Ana Lamas, the undersecretary for the environment, said she had received instructions from the foreign ministry but had not been given a reason. Mr. Milei has previously called global warming a socialist lie. Analysis by the American Library Association and Pen America has found that school libraries in Florida removed hundreds of books from their shelves during the last academic year. Among the titles on the 35-page list were classic novels by Margaret Atwood, Kurt Vonnegut and Toni Morrison. A spokesman for the advocacy group Pen said a restriction of access was a restriction on one's freedom to read. The Florida Department of Education called the list a stunt. The British Museum in London is to receive the biggest ever donation in UK museum history, a collection of Chinese ceramics worth around $1.2 billion. The 1,700 pieces have been on loan to the museum for the past 15 years from the foundation of the late British collector Sir Percival David. They'll now be permanently bequeathed. He purchased the items in Europe, Japan, Hong Kong and China. A diamond necklace with possible links to Marie Antoinette, the queen beheaded in the French Revolution, has sold at auction in Geneva for just over $4 million, well in excess of its estimate. The 300 carats of diamonds are cut in an 18th century style and form a scarf shape. Andres White Coriel, a jewellery specialist from Sotheby's, said the buyer was elated.
I think that the client who bought it is ecstatic. She was ready to fight and she did. And I think that is it's very interesting how a jewel that may be from the 18th century and you may think that it is not wearable, it will be worn very much and very much loved for the time being.
BBC News.
This is Suni Khalid, news editor here at KALW. In case you missed it, a federal judge issued a temporary order preventing the Port of Oakland from advertising or marketing the city's airport as San Francisco Bay Oakland International Airport, and some environmentalists are denouncing the state's new low-carbon fuel standard. You can hear these stories, as well as others, from our partners at NPR by logging onto our website at KALW.org. Meanwhile, keep your dial set on 91.7. We're KALW.
Want to hear that music forever. That's just a portion of the ebullient music that invites the audience to the bustling scene in Sevilla where Bizet's opera Carmen is set. Carmen is the final offering of the fall portion of the San Francisco opera season and opens tonight and for 7 additional performances through the 1st of December before the opera house is taken over by Sugar Plum Fairies and Nutcrackers for the San Francisco Ballet's 37 productions of Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker. Here to tell us more about Carmen is Jeffrey McMillan from the publicity team at SF Opera. Jeff is the director of public relations, and he is also a writer on opera and jazz. And his book, Delightful Lee, The Life and Music of Lee Morgan, was voted best in the industry by the readers of Jazz Times magazine. He was formerly an archivist at the Metropolitan Opera and has appeared on the Met's broadcast opera quiz on multiple occasions. Welcome, Jeff. Glad you could finally be on us instead of directing us to other people.
Well, thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be here. It's an exciting day for us at the opera because, as you said, we open Carmen tonight. it's very exciting for everybody.
Indeed. I wish I could be there. Most recently in the 2018-19 season, Carmen was the wonderful Janae Bridges, the titled role. This production features in the Francesco Zambello-designed production, a newcomer, at least to the San Francisco Opera Stage.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Last time we did this production was in 2019 during the summer. So it's been, 5 years and the world's been through a pandemic in the interim. So it feels like it was even longer ago. So it's great to have it back. Francesca was just here rehearsing with all of the artists up until the final dress rehearsal. So everyone's ready for tonight. Yes, we have two singers making their American debuts in this production. Our Carmen is Eve Maude Hubot. We're very excited she's here. She had a huge triumph at the Salzburg Festival a few years ago as Omneris, jumping in at the last minute. So she's had a good long rehearsal period with the team here in San Francisco, and she's a fabulous Carmen. And the other American debut is Louise Alder, who's fantastic. She's never sung the role of Micaela before, so this will be her American debut, her house debut, and her role debut. So pretty exciting.
And the Francesca Zambello production has had long legs, hasn't it?
It sure has, yeah. There's actually a DVD, if you go back to when it was first new at the Royal Opera in the early 2000s with Jonas Kaufmann and Anna Katarina Antonacci. It's fabulous. It's out there if you probably look for it in your library or on Amazon or somewhere where you could get DVDs. But since there, it's been, to the Norwegian National Opera. It's been Opera Australia recreated it, and it's been presented in Washington. It's been presented here. It's been around, and with good reason. It's a strong production. It's very orange in the settings, kind of evoke this kind of hot, sun-baked setting of Seville. And Francesca's moved the setting from Bizet's original, which is more kind of in the 1820s in Seville, to 1875, which is when the opera had its world premiere.
Well, you mentioned to me that you had a favorite historic Carmen when I asked you the other day. Tell me about why you love the voice of Risa Stevens.
Sure. Yeah, Risa Stevens is, for a certain generation, Carmen is one of those pieces. It's been kind of part of the operatic milieu for a long time, since almost the very beginning. And every generation seemed to have a favorite Carmen. And Risa Stevens was that in the United States during the 40s and 50s. And, in the intro, you mentioned my time at the Metropolitan Opera, where I was there as an archivist. One of my duties there, which I always feel very blessed to have been able to do, was to go to Miss Stevens' apartment, have tea, and pick up all of her donated programs for the Met Archives. And it was just a real pleasure. And one of my colleagues at the Met was also writing a book about her, which has been since published, John Panino's Risa Stevens, An American Opera Life. I believe the title is something like that. Mm-hmm. It's terrific, but she's a sweet lady, an incredible Carmen. And there are some video clips on YouTube if you want to take a look at she did it.
Well, I actually found a clip of her singing the Habanera, so we're going to talk about that in a second. She was heard actually here on the San Francisco Opera Stage as Carmen in both the 1944 and 45 seasons. Pretty amazing. Let's hear her in that seductive Habanera. Jeff, tell us what Carmen is doing in this aria.
Well, this is Carmen's entrance aria, and it's also one of the most well-known operatic melodies, full stop. I think a lot of people, when they hear this, they know it, and they might not know the context in which it happens in the opera, but it's, all the ladies who work in the cigarette factory are going out for a breath of fresh air and to take a break. And, that's a different part, actually. Her aria comes right after that, so... All the men see all the ladies and they wonder, where's Carmen? And then she comes storming out with this wonderful melody.
And she talks about love being a bird of rebellion, sort of. What are some of the other words we should look out for?
while she's talking about, you know, if I love you, look out.
I've heard that.
She's kind of, it's a little bit of a warning. You know, she might be very attractive and enticing, but look out.
Let's hear.
They might love her, but if she loves them back.
Let's hear Reza Stevens now and then more with Jeff McMillan. The Habanera from Bizet's Carmen. That was Reza Stevens under the direction of Fritz Reiner in the Orchestra e Coro dell'Opera di Roma. I don't know if I had the accent right on that at all. Anyway, we'll hear on the podium Benjamin Manis making his company debut conducting Bizet's popular aria in this opera in the Francesca Zambello production, Yves Maud Ubo as Carmen in that production. Jeff, we talked just about an aria or two. For those that aren't familiar with the plot of Carmen, how could it be? Share with us the 50-cent synopsis, if you would. And spoiler alert, it doesn't end well.
That's right. It doesn't end well, but it's quite a lovely journey getting there to a tragic ending. So, yeah, we meet Carmen. That's her coming out into stage and kind of telling us, the audience, what she's all about. One of the people who's really enamored of her is a soldier who has kind of a fall from grace. You know, he becomes very enamored of her and then becomes very obsessed with her. And we watch this relationship, which begins in a very passionate circumstances, kind of devolve into an obsession. And she is a character who longs to be free and untethered. And he's more interested in more or less possessing her. So it doesn't end well, but as I said, there are some incredible musical moments along the way, a great drama, and also just great moments of spectacular stagecraft in this production. I mean, one thing I would mention that always kind of gets a rise out of the audience, and we're really expecting that to happen again tonight, is when Escamillo, the bullfighter, makes his entrance. He comes in on horseback.
On an actual horse.
on a big, huge 18-year-old gypsy vanner named Drogon.
I have a great story to tell you about a couple of dogs that were in the production of Gounod's classic ballet. I'll tell you that some other time. Let's hear the entrance of Escamillo includes that well-known aria, the Toreador aria. Let's hear that now and more with Jeff after that. Hold on with this, the Toreador song, Votre Toast.
Signor, signor, cara de Clesula, il torrero de Satana, por plaisir, il sole comar, sir che
plein séjour de fête, le cirque est plein du haut en bas. Les spectateurs perdent la tête, les spectateurs s'interpellent en fracas.
Telling the story of the brave souls that enter the bullring. Also, another familiar sound for people will be the Toreador song. Let's hear that with Thomas Hampson singing. What's the boastful story that Thomas will be singing? The storyline of that Toreador song.
Well, the bullfighter comes into the bar and just kind of...
It sounds like the beginning of a joke.
Yeah.
Bullfighter comes into the bar.
He gets everybody's attention. He's full of bravado, and he talks about his courage in the ring and the life and death situation he faces in his craft of bullfighting.
You'll recognize this tune from Carmen. It's a little bit later than that, isn't it? Let me see if I can find it. Oh. Ah, I thought I had this clue. Here we go. Ah. Thomas Hampson singing the Toreador song from Bizet's Carmen. The final offering of the San Francisco Opera's fall season, Christian Van Horn in the role of Escamillo, Yves Maud Ubot making her San Francisco Opera debut in the title role opening tonight at the War Memorial Opera House here in San Francisco. Jeff, San Francisco Opera recently initiated a wildly successful encounter series for selected operas where the lobbies of the War Memorial Opera House are transformed with costumed performers and decorated appropriately. Tell us how that all got started.
Sure, yeah, it has been really successful, and it's been very exciting because a lot of people who come to the encounter events are folks we haven't seen before. So it's a great introduction to opera. It's a great introduction to the Opera House, which is, you know, one of the great buildings in San Francisco. So it's it started in 2022 with our new production of La Traviata, and the way it worked was we performed Act One of Traviata, and then when people would normally just go out and get a drink and use the bathroom and you know, do the things that you do at intermission, they would walk out and there was this big party happening in the lobbies and in the hallways and stairways going up and down to the various levels of the Opera House. So, and they're all kind of thematically aligned to the opera that's on stage. So Violetta's you know, Paris for Traviata. And then last year we had Eliseo d'Amore, and it was kind of like, you know, the Italian Riviera and Cinecittà and everything. It was the party atmosphere for that opera. This time it's Seville and it's the Carmen encounter, and yeah, it's going to be a great night. I wish I could tell you to, you know, go to the website and buy tickets, but it's actually sold out.
I'm assuming also in the lobby cigars and cigarettes will be for sale,
but you can't smoke them in the building.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, it is sold out for this encounter, but stay tuned in the spring when, what will there be encounters for spring productions?
This is the encounter for this current season. We'll be announcing our new season early in the next year. So stay tuned for more about future encounter events there.
In spite of the 1121 Encounter being sold out, there are seven other opportunities, including tonight's opening, sfopera.com, for availability. Jeff, well, as a flutist, we can't leave a discussion of Carmen without hearing the beautiful entr'acte between Acts 2 and 3. Jeff, unfortunately, on most recordings, it takes a Sherlock Holmes to find out who's playing in the orchestra. I'm very grateful for the SF Opera for having a full listing of their personnel there. But no luck for me with this recording with Seiji Ozawa leading the Orchestre National de France. We're very lucky to have acting principal flute of the San Francisco Opera while Julie McKenzie is away. Susan Kang will be playing it for these productions. Thank you, Jeff, for taking some time. Have a great opening night, and let's go out with some more music from Carmen and the Entr'acte. Listen for that beautiful flute playing. Who? I don't know. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Mystery flutist there, Seiji Ozawa conducting that entr'acte from Carmen. That's all part of the incredible music you'll hear at the San Francisco Opera over these next several weeks. Eight performances, including tonight opening. The 21st is sold out, but you'll have a lovely chances to catch it. sfopera.com. More classic opera coming up this hour with the Opera San Jose production of Puccini's La Bohème. But next, sandwiching these classics is a production by the good folks at Ars Minerva, an obscure Baroque opera. And to tell us more about it, I'm pleased to welcome Celine Ricci back. She's founder and executive artistic director of that group, whose mission is to engage new audiences for classical music through innovative productions of Baroque operas. In addition to being a gifted opera singer herself, Celine is an accomplished director with a history of conceiving, creating, and directing shows beyond the operatic genre, including musicals, fairs, concerts, and public arts initiatives. She also currently serves as the program director at 836M in San Francisco, where she spearheads multidisciplinary arts programs, artist residencies, exhibitions, dance performances, concerts, and talks. Ars Minerva is dedicated to reviving this forgotten music, collaborating with artists in the San Francisco Bay Area to bring these rare and captivating experiences back to life. Celine, welcome to On the Arts. I think welcome back. We've talked before.
Hi, David. Thank you so much for inviting me. And yes, we already talked in the past, and I'm really happy to be back. I think last time was last summer with the Festival Opera for La Voix Humaine and Die Don't Deniers.
Oh, yes. Yes, better memory than I. Thank you for that wonderful memory, by the way. Okay. Celine, I do challenge even the most ardent opera fan to hum a few bars from composers Antonio Sartorio and Marc Antonio Ziani and La Flora, which was written in 1681, but the plot is familiar. Give us a brief synopsis of La Flora.
Yes, so La Flora synopsis was actually happening in the late Roman Republic. So the Republic was about to become empire. And so we have Sulla and we have Pompeius involved into this opera. So what I found is interesting is that time of history where a republic becomes then a dictatorship, and also how history repeats, right, all the time. So I was interesting in that plot, but also then it's a fantasy around this moment of history, where then you have this Flora, this woman, who all those political men are around. And you know, like we can see nowadays in many places where, you know, influencers and politician and actor, actresses, all that are all together mixed in Italy, certainly. You know, you see late Roman Republic, you see 1681, you can see nowadays, and you can see like a common threat that it goes through human history.
But we also have the familiar story of the person who's got an arranged marriage but already married.
Yes, yeah,
so
also.
We have that kind of a plot going on that says that has been exercised much later operas.
Oh, yeah, this plot, because, you know, arranged marriages were very common, and there are still parts of the world where they are. And Pompeius doesn't want to be married to another woman. He wants to be with Flora, but everyone and everything wants him to marry someone else for political interests. And so he's trying to get out of there. And so also Flora and another woman who is married to this person called Servio, that apparently she doesn't have to be married to because she has to marry Pompeo. So it's kind of those love triangles where everyone fights during the whole opera.
It's kind of why we have soap operas in this kind of a convoluted plot. Yeah,
exactly. Sometimes, and it's what I was saying, you know, sometimes it really looks like a soap opera because they are all those characters, they are into houses of each other. And, you know, like when you see, look at those soap operas, you never know why people are in other people's houses. You never know how they came in, how they were there. you know, it's almost like the elite. So the elite goes into other places, right? On each other, in each other's flats or gardens, parks, palaces.
And of course, there'll be subtitles to help people along the way. The performances are at the ODC Theater, November 15th to 17th, Friday through Saturday at 7:30, Sunday at 2:30. I mentioned two composers, Antonio Sartorio, who died halfway through the process of composition, and then it was completed by Marc Antonio Ziani, who was did it, of course, in the same style, and I don't think there was much of a bump in terms of what people heard.
No, so we people who will attend the show will see that it's very Ziani, Marc Antonio Ziani, really followed the style of Sartorio, and you don't feel anything. I mean, I can feel just a tiny bit because I did a program of Marc Antonio Ziani several years ago, and I know how different his style is from Sartorio, and I can see how he adapted. I can feel when maybe the change happens in the opera, but it's really very subtle. No one, I mean, maybe a musician might feel it, but it's very well done.
And also in the cast, we have soprano Alexa Anderson in the title role, contralto Jasmine Johnson in the role of Pompeo, bass Wayne Wong as the Emperor Sylla, soprano Aura Veruni as Emilia's contralto Sarah Kuden as Servio, who has also performed with other Ars Minerva productions, soprano Nina Jones as Geminio, and tenor Sidney Ragland as Strabon. Prize-winning harpsichordist Matthew Durst will conduct the production. Again, this is at ODC, the 15th through the 17th. Now, I do have... I'm going to give you the chance to... tell our audiences what we're going to hear. We were offered three cuts, not from La Flora, but here's your choices. We could play Colli Aparti or T'adoro Si, Non Giova Piangere from Domenico Freschi's Ermelinda, or Madre di Letto Addio from Giovanni Porta's Iphigenia in Aulide. I hope I was pronouncing that somewhat.
So maybe we can, the Iphigenia in Aulide, it's a production from 2018, and Aura Veruni, who sings very often with us, sang this aria, which is very beautiful. Iphigenia in Aulide is an opera from 1738. It was premiered in Munich for the Carnival of Munich, and this is, it's based on Greek mythology. It's the moment where Iphigenia is asked to kill herself, to sacrifice herself for the Greeks to be able to go to Troy and win the war of Troy. And so this is the moment where Iphigenia says to her mother Clytemnestra a farewell. And Aurélie sings it very beautifully, so maybe we can hear a little piece of that.
We will indeed. From Giovanni Porta's Iphigenia in Aulide, Madre di Letto Addio, then more with Celine Ricci. Madre di Letto Addio from Giovanni Porta's Iphigenia in Aulide, from a past performance by the Ars Minerva group, talking with Celine Ricci. Celine, just gorgeous music. It really is. Tell us a little bit about your discovery process, not only for La Flora, but for other works that Ars Minerva has brought to the stage.
Yeah, well, you know, so my passion started very early. As many musicians, we start music when we are kids. And then I grew up so with this passion of music, but also archaeology. I was, you know, in college also in archaeology at La Sorbonne. And then when I started singing professionally, I was singing mostly early music, which I had the privilege also to work with ensemble that were recreating forgotten operas. And with my passion for archaeology, immediately everything blended for me. And so when I started Ars Minerva, what I wanted was to do this work, to find those manuscripts of forgotten operas and bring them back to life. Because I think there is beautiful music, as you just heard, and that sometimes we overplay the same repertoire. So I started really this work in United States, and we are the only company in United States doing that work. Where I find mostly the manuscripts it's in Italy at Biblioteca Marciana in Venice, but what you just heard was actually in Munich and in Dresden. And so I look for those manuscripts. I'm very also interested in the plots, especially plots of a more 17th century, which are very modern, and that people nowadays actually relate more than 18th century plots. And then we do the work to make a modern score, and then we do it. So it takes several months to do everything together, and it's the reason why we have also one opera per year. Also, we are a small company, and doing more than one opera a year would be difficult for us. But yeah, this is the process. It's really to bring back to life this music. And actually, I have to say that very recently, like last month, one of the opera we have brought back to life in 2016 called The Amazons, that we did from 1679, was played again in Italy at the place where it was created, just out of Venice, with our score, our modern score, our work. And to me was very emotional. I went there, I talked before they performed. And to me, it's like, yeah, the mission accomplished. Yep. Now the score is there and they are performing it again where it was created.
A rebirth, thanks to you. That's in the wonderful work of the team at Ars Minerva. That's fantastic. That must be really exciting to discover an aria, just that aria alone, and mm-hmm. bring that back to life and with manuscript that you can read rather than pen and ink, which is the way, of course, it was done back then. Those manuscripts must be very delicate.
Yeah, so thankfully they're digitized. So we don't, but yeah, if you go to Marciana in Venice, for example, and you want to see the manuscript, you have to do some tests before, and then you have the gloves and everything. So it's a very fragile. Mm-hmm.
Well, keep up the wonderful work. And
Thank you.
I would say also see what's cooking at arsminerva.org for more information. The performances of La Flora, the modern world premiere from 1681, composed by Antonio Sartorio and Mark Antonio Ziani, will be November 15th to the 17th. That's Friday through Saturday at 7:30 with a Sunday matinee at 2:30. The ODC Theater is at 17th Street in San Francisco. odc.dance/tickets for more information. And of course, we'll have those links at our website, especially for arsminerva.org. Celine, thank you so much for taking some time today. And it sounds like a fantastic production. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you. Thank you, David.
Well, how about some more opera today? Let's see what we have here. I've got it somewhere. It's for the Opera San Jose production of La Boheme. Somewhere. Oh, well. Come on. I knew I had it in this playlist. No fancy overture for this next offering. That's all you get when La Boheme starts. Unlike the overture for Carmen or even other operas from the pen of this composer, Giacomo Puccini, that's all you get. And then it gets right down to it. Snow will fall in San Jose when one of opera's greatest love stories, Puccini's La Bohème, returns to Opera San Jose in a production set in Paris at Christmas time. In this production, set in the aftermath of the Great War, as directed by my guest Michel Cuisin. And the production has six chances to catch it this Saturday through the 1st of December. Woo Young Woon stars as the poet Rodolfo, sopranos Kirsten Piper Brown and Michaela Sager alternating as Mimi. It's a tantalizing tale, if you've not seen Bohème, of young artists living on the edge in their Parisian garret. The director is with me to tell us more. Michel Cuisin is returning as the resident stage director at Opera San Jose for the 2024-25 season and will direct La Bohème and assist on the Magic Flute and Magic Flute, Bluebeard's Castle, and Zorro. Michel's journey into the world of directing began as a fellowship at the Metropolitan Opera for the 2022-23 season, and she worked on several productions there and returns there soon for a production of the Met's Magic Flute, a holiday presentation, and Tosca. In addition to being San Jose's resident stage director this season, Michel comes back to the Metropolitan Opera, as I mentioned, and she's also was recently assisted director of Susanna at the Opera Theater of St. Louis, directed by the amazing Patricia Rosette. Welcome to you, Michelle.
Good. Thank you for having us.
Of course. And I'm very pleased to be also joined by one of the stars of the production, and that would be Melissa Sondi. Indian-American soprano Melissa Sondi is Musetta in the production and joins me now. In the 2023-24 season, she debuted as Juliet in Romeo and Juliet, Gilda in Rigoletto at Opera San Jose. She also performed as Musetta in Pocket Opera in Cinnabar's collaborative production of La Bohème recently. In 2023, Melissa won first place in the Adult Classical Voice category at the L.A. semifinals of the Music International Grand Prix competition and was also a semifinalist in the Orpheus Vocal Competition in 2017. Welcome to you, Melissa.
Hi. Thank you, David. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Well, this is a production that I think everyone can relate to, La Bohème. When was your first association? You've sung this role before and fairly recently here in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Musetta. This is my second Musetta, but my first one was this summer. And it was actually an English translation. Pocket Opera was founded by a man named Donald Pippin, who wrote all of his own original English translations. And it's been an institution for decades. And it was really cool to sing it in a little bit more of an accessible way, a little bit more difficult to sing it in English since it was written for Italian. But it was a joy, and I really love playing this character, and I'm really happy to be at the company I'm doing my residency at and singing it again.
And this will be in Italian with English subtitles.
Yes.
Michel, tell us about your directing choices and this setting post-World War I.
Yeah, so this production is by Timothy Neer. I'm getting handed this production, and it's an OSG staple. So I'm really glad to have the scenery and the costumes already set. And for it being timed in World War I, I think it's still very relatable, especially with what's going on in the other side of the world. And so I really want this production for our characters to find like their own sense of belonging and community, and of course finding love. But I think not just romantic love, but like finding that sense of belongingness everywhere. What's different in this production, I guess, is that I really wanted Pauline and Trinard, for example, to be in Act 3 when Musetta and Marcello are in the midst of their of their breakup. Again, like going back to that sense of belongingness and finding their community, I've always sensed, where are they when they're doing act three, and also just putting a magnifying glass on Mimi and Musetta's relationship, and just finding more like there's always more to that feminine relationships as well, and not just the romantic stories. So yeah.
Quite a production. And this is, of course, one of the most performed operas, beautiful, beautiful melodies mm-hmm. by Puccini. And the story was adapted into the musical Rent. It's taken all kinds of all kinds of legs with just the storyline, let alone the music.
Yeah, I actually knew about Rent first, and I was obsessed with it growing up. And so once I learned more about opera and classical music, I was like, oh my God, this is where it all came from. Mm-hmm. And it was such a joy to also just learn it that way as well.
Let's just get a taste of La Boheme. Here's an aria from Act One. Is it K or Che Gelida Manina?
K.
Gelida Manina and Placido Domingo singing music of Puccini, and then more with my guests.
Thank you.
Placido Domingo singing that amazing aria from La Boheme. Boy, that performance also included George Schulte on the podium, I believe, along with an amazing cast that also included some of opera's greats. Oh, wow. Getting back to my guests for the Opera San Jose production of La Boheme, Michelle Aina Cuisson, the director, and Melissa Zondi, who sings the role of the amazing character that has the waltz that everyone knows. Tell us about your character, Melissa.
Musetta comes in and really by storm in the second act. And she is trying to make her ex-boyfriend jealous, who's at the local cafe that they all attend. And she has herself a sugar daddy that has helped her in the meantime, anytime she's not with her broke painter ex-boyfriend at the time, Marcello. And she causes a scene to get his attention and finally gets that attention. And in that scene, she sings, Musetta's waltz, Quando Menvo, which it's always been one of my favorite arias to sing. I've sung it for so long, and to be able to sing it with a full orchestra now, yes, in Italian and in such a gorgeous production alongside such amazing singers, it's really a dream come true. Yeah. And they go through many, many obstacles in their relationship in a short span of time, but passionate nonetheless.
Well, Melissa, I'm going to give you a choice of some operatic greats. We don't have a recording of you singing it yet, but we will we will after these productions, I'm sure. Would you like to hear Quando Menvo as sung by A, Victoria de Los Angeles, B, Renee Fleming, or C, where is my C? Do I have a C? Maria Callas.
Let's go with Maria Callas.
All right. From Act Two, Quando Menvo, Musetta's Waltz. Thank you so much for taking some time, both Melissa Sondi as Musetta and Michelle Cuisson, director of the production.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Here's Maria Callas. Diva Maria Callas, Musetta's Waltz, Quando Menvo. Melissa Sondi will be singing that role in the production by Opera San Jose, November 16th through December 1st. OperaSJ.org for more information. I'm David Latulippe. Thanks so much for joining me for this operatic version of On the Arts. Our shows are archived at kalw.org. And my thanks to Janice Lee for producing the show.